Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
In New York, the search continues for the .44 caliber killer.
See if you can explain to me why I would want to be a Scientologist.
Betches Media presents...
Tell me we have a lead.
Stone Cold, no.
It was literally like the Hunger Games.
Not another true crime podcast.
What can I say? Tough titties.
It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Hey guys, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast with me, your co-host, Sarah, and I'm here with filmmaker, author, podcast host, Andrew Jenks.
Yes, bad author, but that's okay.
Bad author? Why do you say that?
Well, I had a book come out a few years ago called My Adventures as a Young Filmmaker, which you can't get on Amazon, and it just wasn't...
Shameless plug.
It wasn't exactly a bestseller, so...
Oh, that's... They can't all be hits,
I guess. They can't all be hits. That's fucking right, Sarah.
Thank you. I know. You got to get more comfortable cursing. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Andrew is the host of the What Really Happened podcast. I feel like it's a history podcast. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I guess it can span anywhere from like thousands of years ago to 6 months ago, but yeah.
Yeah, with like Meek Mill. I saw you just did an episode on that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I have to add it to my... queue or whatever. Yeah. Cool. So I wanted to ask you, like, what made you decide to start this podcast?
So I had been talking to Seven Bucks Productions, which is Dwayne Johnson and Danny Garcia, Brian Gewirtz, and they... I'd been talking to them about this documentary that I wanted to do about a time in January 1981. Muhammad Ali gets a phone call and that there's a guy who is about to jump off the 9th floor of an office building.
Oh boy.
And Ali happens, of all places in the world, to be 4 minutes away from where this is happening. Shows up in a Rolls Royce, goes up the 9 floors.
As you do, in a Rolls Royce.
As you do. And not only that, actually had a... his driver drove him in his Rolls Royce.
Okay, fair enough.
And gets there. The guy had been up, his name was Joseph, for a couple hours. And police had tried to talk him down. A priest had tried to talk him down. I think, a psychologist. None of that worked. Ali goes up and talks him down under, you'd have to fact check me, but 20 to 30 minutes. And so I was telling them about this incredible story and, you know, what really happened. And there's a couple things that you learn when working with The Rock and his and Seven Bucks Productions. One being, they're always thinking, how can we scale this out, if you will? How can we make this bigger? And so one thought was, this is an interesting concept, looking at historical, and it's not necessarily entirely original, but just like, these days with access to information, is there a way in which this is kind of a first episode to something else? And then myself nor Seven Bucks had ever done a podcast. So then we started looking into that. And then we met with Cadence 13. And that's how it all came to be.
That's awesome. So how do you decide what topics to cover?
Usually it's something that I'm curious about.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that... works to our advantage where we discover a lot of other people are curious about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it doesn't, where like I was really curious about Winston Churchill's depression, and that's been our worst rated episode. So
honestly, I should tell my dad because he's obsessed with Winston Churchill.
I mean, the one thing about this show is I really mean this, like I am astounded and like really grateful to have access to incredible guests.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that one, it was a little bit of a last second episode in that we only had, I think, a couple weeks to do it. And I was like, man, in an ideal world, we could talk to Churchill's biographer. Mm-hmm. And it was like 2 days later, we were interviewing Churchill's biographer. So your dad would like it because okay. we talk to the real, we get to like amazing. Churchill, obviously, you know, we can't speak with, but we get to speak with some of the kind of the real people that you'd want to.
Yeah, that is really cool. How long do you think you spend researching each episode?
So it ranges like for, you know, there's six individuals that Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and Morrison, Kurt Cobain, and Amy Winehouse, Brian Jones.
Yeah, the 27 Club, right?
Yeah. Damn it, Sorry. Sarah. I was trying to not use the term to make a point.
Oh, my bad.
But no, I'm kidding. So that one I've been pitching around as a documentary series mm-hmm. for years. So I'd read books about it, had studied it. So in like a weird way, I'd been researching that one for a while.
Okay.
Then there's ones where when we started up on season two of the podcast, I started researching in like, you know, maybe 8 months ago. So that's like the second type, I'd say, of episode where it's specifically for the podcast. Because a few of them I've been like thinking about for years. And then there's some where I look at my producer, Chris, and we're like, shit, we have this episode in 2 weeks and mm-hmm. I haven't read anything.
Yeah, I think that's like the hardest part of doing a podcast. So we do like true crime, but we'll mm-hmm. also do like scams, fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
I definitely think the research part is the hardest. I mean, it's just like once you go down a rabbit hole, there's like a million things you could do. Like, do you watch documentary? Do you read a book? Like, personally, I don't like watching documentaries. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have the attention span. I just say that I have commitment issues. Like, I can't pick one thing to watch.
Such a millennial.
I know. I would just rather like read something. But
or not a millennial, actually. I don't know.
I know, because I'd rather read one.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, research is I think normally it's what I kind of respect, which it seems like you guys do, is you really put in the time and the research, and it kind of is endless or a rabbit hole.
Thank
like you.
You
said. and then the trick to it is to talk about it in a way that isn't like pedantic or showy. Like,
right.
Look at all of the information. I know you have to get, you have all this information, and in the end, maybe you use like 5% of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of being able to stick away from your ego and be okay with like, I need, my job here is to tell the best story, mm-hmm. not to show off that I worked my ass off or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I always say, like, kill your babies. Like,
yeah.
Your ideas are like your babies. And
every time. If you're going to tell a straight story, you're a lot of times killing your best babies, too. Like, you have, like, I'm like, if we're going to go with the metaphor, you have a really good-looking baby who's already speaking 5 different languages.
Incredible.
And you're like, this baby is perfect. But then when you're telling your story, you're like, this baby's a side note. Like, this is a different story or something. It's shiny. I like this baby, but we're going to have to fucking
murder it.
Yeah. Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So actually, I think in your maybe podcast description, it specifically says that you don't really focus on conspiracy theories. We kind of only focus on conspiracy theories, so I thought we would compromise and talk about conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely will go into conspiracy theories. We just will call them that and dismiss them as such if we find that to be the case. That was a weird, I don't know why I jumped on you and corrected you, but
no,
yeah.
I get what you're saying, because which I'm about to like want to talk about,
yeah.
But I listened to your episode on like Michael Jordan's retirement, which mm-hmm. is a huge conspiracy theory. It seemed kind of like in the beginning you were possibly on board with this theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so for anyone who's listening and isn't familiar because they don't usually watch sports, hi.
hello.
So in 1993, Michael Jordan, best basketball player ever.
Most famous guy on the planet at the time.
Okay, true. Retired for a year, and as we all know, because we saw Space Jam, he went to play baseball and was not very good. So you can correct me if I'm wrong at any time. Please do. The conspiracy...
A lot of sports people would jump on you about not being very good at baseball, but I'm not going to do that.
Okay, yeah. It's actually funny you said that because, like, my two podcast producers, right before I came here, got into this, like, screaming match that I could eavesdrop in our office about whether, like, Michael Jordan was actually good at baseball or not because he had, like, a, what, .202 batting average?
Yes, exactly. So, if you want to get... I mean...
Yeah, let's do it.
A lot of people will say, Michael Jordan sucked at baseball. He was playing, I think, double A or triple A. So he was in the minor leagues. Just starts playing on professional baseball and is hitting, what was the number you had, 220 or something?
Yeah, like 202.
So an all-star is batting 300. Mm-hmm. A guy who's never played professional baseball steps onto a field and starts hitting 220, which is definitely like not great, but it's not like he was batting what a pitcher. He wasn't batting like 100. So I'd be on the side of like, did he walk in? Was he great? No. What he did though is pretty exceptional. He just started playing another sport. Like think about that.
Wild.
That's fucking nuts.
Yeah, I can barely I can't even read and like talk at the same time, so
yeah.
I could not go and play
sport.
This guy
just started playing another sport. That's crazy if you think about it.
And also, I feel like when you're literally Michael Jordan and you're used to people evaluating on being like Michael Jordan level of doing anything, like I feel like you kind of set the bar too high for yourself.
That's for sure. And a lot of pressure, a lot of people talking about you. I guess his fielding wasn't exceptional either. I think he played left or right field, but anyway, yeah.
Okay. No, that was a great side tangent. Okay, but the conspiracy is not whether Michael Jordan is good at baseball or not. The conspiracy is that he was basically forced into a year retirement by the NBA commissioner because he'd had a lot of gambling debts and, like, bad shit was happening. They didn't really want it to become a huge scandal. Is that, like, kind of...
Yeah, he had been caught gambling with some bad people, too, who were known to be involved in illegal activity. And so a lot of people still to this day really believe that his father was murdered. Michael Jordan's father was murdered in 1993 because he owed a lot of money to some bad people, and they wanted to let him know, and so that's how they let him know. And all of these new stories, the NBA was worried, would start surfacing about Jordan's gambling, which had already been out there. Like Connie Chung had done this big interview and all these different things, and they thought it was going to really explode. And Michael had made the NBA go transfer the NBA from $100 million enterprise into $1 billion one.
It's crazy.
And so the conspiracy was they were going to protect that at all costs. And David Stern, the commissioner of the league, as you pointed out, met with Michael and said, listen, you need to go away for a year. Say that you need some time to, your father's, his father hadn't died, his father had not died yet. Been murdered yet. Go away for a little while and then you can come back and it'll have calmed down at that point. A big part to remember at this point also is that there wasn't social media. So they were dealing with like the newspapers.
Yeah, so I feel like it's a lot easier to like contain information when like you're a lot more in control of what you want to tell the press.
100% They owned it. A lot of people, though, a lot of the reporters went digging for this kind of conspiracy theory. The murder happened in North Carolina, and they were trying to see if there was some sort of tie between Michael's gambling and his father's death. And they spent so much time doing that, in addition to Jordan's, because of that, and also Jordan's power and the money he made so many people, everyone missed the real conspiracy theory that is not a conspiracy theory, but a theory that shows they got it all wrong. They put two people in jail for the murder. By they got it all wrong, I mean they put two people in jail for the murder, one of whom had nothing to do with it.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought that up, because when I was researching this Michael Jordan conspiracy theory, I literally felt the same way. I was like, initially, actually, I was like inclined to believe it, but also like I fuck with a good conspiracy theory. Like, I'm into it.
Did you just say I fuck with a good conspiracy theory?
I sure did.
I like that.
Thank you.
I fuck with that.
Thank you. Amazing. But while I was researching this, I was like, hold up, like record scratch. This, the real conspiracy theory is his dad's murder, like itself.
Yep.
Okay, so.
You got it.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. So, everyone listening, hello again. For those of you who don't know, and I honestly didn't really know this, Michael Jordan's dad, James Jordan, was murdered on August 3rd, 1993. He was in Wilmington, North Carolina for a funeral. He was driving his Lexus back to Charlotte, as you do, when he like supposedly stopped to sleep, but that part is sort of contested. He was supposed to get on a flight in Charlotte to go to like play in a charity golf tournament the next day.
Yep. With Michael, yep.
With Michael. But things went awry when, according to the prosecution, he was shot and killed in a robbery gone wrong. And his body was found in a swamp near, in South Carolina, I think, near the border.
Yep, you got it.
I don't know why I wrote this down, but he was fully dressed but missing his shoes, which is weird.
We can get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it's integral to the story, but
no, I don't know why I put it either, but I thought that was like interesting detail. So I think they were 18 years old at the time, maybe.
It depends at the time, but yeah, 17, 18, when the trial got started, they were obviously, it didn't start for, I think, a year or two later. So then they, 18, 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're talking about two young adults.
There we go.
Daniel Green and Larry Demery were both charged and convicted of the murder, and they're serving time now. Demery has a 40-year sentence. He's was eligible for parole in 2016, but I think he like failed both times so far. And Green is serving a life sentence. And the important thing to note is that Demery cooperated with authorities and basically like testified against his friend. Green, who is now appealing the conviction, and I think this is literally happening like right now. I read an article that either they're appealing today or a decision is supposed to be made today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He actually just called me, but I missed it.
What? Okay, that's crazy. A lot of, I don't know, I feel like this murder, first of all, it's obviously got to be horrible to have your father murdered, but I think this murder was like especially hard, because I read that like initially they couldn't identify who it was, and so 11 days after he was killed, he was cremated except for like his jaw and hands, which were saved.
Which
I feel like has to be especially rough if you can't even like properly say goodbye, right?
For Michael?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you. I can recap.
Okay.
Where it all went. I mean, what you're saying, I think, is interesting, and it's something that people tend to overlook, which is, I mean, there's one thing here, which is, a man was, at the end of the day, it's a very sad story because a man died.
For sure.
With that said, and I am going to say, like, we've been lied to about what happened, like straight to the face, for 20 to 25 years.
Yeah, I think it is 25 years. Yeah. So I guess just to recap, the evidence that the state had was supposedly there was blood evidence found inside the Lexus, and mostly the testimony of Demery that Green pulled the trigger.
Well, first off, the story as it was presented by the sheriff, Hubert Stone, and then the district attorney, Johnson Britt, is that James Jordan was driving late at night in North Carolina. James Jordan had lived in North Carolina for most of his life. He'd been in Brooklyn, but most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He had driven those highways that he was on countless times. Michael went to University of North Carolina. James Jordan went to all of his games. They were best friends, not in like the, oh, they're, but like they were best friends. Mm-hmm. They were really close. And what we have been told is that at 3 a.m, James Jordan in a red Lexus decided to pull over to the side of a highway. And the area that he pulled over is an area called Robeson County. Other people say Lumberton County. Mm-hmm. This particular county is very well known for being a drug and human trafficking area because it's at the center of I-95 from Maine to Florida. Mm-hmm. And it's also a prime area to be going east-west. And so I'm trying to think of if you're in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. if you're from LA, which I'm not, but
thankfully,
yeah, it would be as if I was in a red Lexus and lived in Beverly Hills and knew it would take a while to get back to Beverly Hills from wherever I was going and decided to take a nap at 3 a.m. in Compton. That
doesn't seem well advised.
Doesn't seem well advised. Now, Daniel Green, one of the two men who we've been told committed the murder, has multiple alibis that say he wasn't there at 3 a.m.
Right. I read that there were people who would have attested to the fact that he was actually at a party at 3 a.m.
He was somewhere else.
Or like a barbecue or something.
Yep, exactly. And those people did not take the stand. So that's one thing.
Do we know why? I didn't get that far in my research.
So unfortunately, as a lot of people know, you know, public defenders have a ton of cases that are thrown at them. Mm-hmm. Daniel Green didn't come for money, was given this public defender, Angus Thompson, and it was inept. His defense was inept. And they didn't, as is often the case with wrongful convictions, I don't think he ever thought he'd actually be found, at least at first, guilty because he wasn't there. And so his defense didn't actually do the work that most people would think of as basic. Mm-hmm. But one thing to contextualize with that is they're working on a million cases at once. And that's a funding problem. That's a big reason why we have mass incarceration. Either way, that happens. Then if you read, which are available and I've read, the transcripts of when both men come in and are interrogated, the cops lie and say to Larry Demery that Daniel, the guy that we're talking about here, pinned it on him.
Mm-hmm. I did read that.
Which was a lie.
Yeah. I mean, the cops are allowed to lie, which I feel like not everyone knows. I only know because I watch a ton of Law and Order.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like that would be a huge thing.
Yeah. And so they say literally something like, unless you say that they didn't say this literally. They said something to the effect of, unless you say that Daniel was the one that did it and not you, you're going to get a shot in your ass, some sort of like what they probably thought was a clever and harsh way of saying, we're going to give you the death penalty. And around that point, he turned on Daniel.
Oh, I did say that. It was like a shot in your ass, but the kind you don't wake up from.
Ooh, good memory.
Thank you.
That is it. More or less, that is precisely.
And I was like, is that how they kill people in jail? I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
But that's a side note.
So then there's that. Then there is James Jordan's shirt, which goes through an interesting process mm-hmm. where the government has his shirt that he was murdered in. When they do the when they look at his body,
autopsy.
They look at his autopsy. There is no bullet hole in his shirt.
Right. I had read that they claimed that the bullet entered like the top of his chest, but there was only a hole in the bottom part of his shirt, and it like did not even come close to matching up.
Exactly. So the shirt at some point after his death goes missing, is actually buried at one point. Then comes out because they realize that they've buried James Jordan's shirt, and all of a sudden there's a perfectly placed hole in the shirt, which followed the narrative that they had been telling. James Jordan's blood went missing at one point. It's missing.
Yes.
And now it turns out that the SBI, which is also the investigation bureau that looked into the case that's known as the staircase, blood evidence also went missing. This woman, Jennifer Elwell, is essentially ordered to get rid of James Jordan's blood.
Shady.
Once you look at the full picture, and we have an episode called for our What Really Happened podcast called Special Episode, The Trial of Daniel Green, relay out how once you contextually look at it and then provide the facts, it's actually impossible for Daniel Green to have been there. And we're talking about, and this is the important part, a man who has been in prison for 25 years, will be for the rest of his life, unless people speak up and are afraid and are willing to go up against potentially Jordan and the NBA, because they seem to be taking this the wrong way, where it's something against him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know of places like ABC that have declined to touch this because they're worried that Michael would get angry, and he has a financial deal with them.
That's pretty wild. That's, I feel like, a second level of conspiracy. Personally, I would be excited if Michael Jordan like,
to me,
got
that
pissed
part,
off at me.
Sorry to interrupt, but no, I just want to be clear. To me, that part doesn't really fucking matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, the part that really should matter is if you go to change.org and look up Daniel Green, or if you just Google Daniel Green, James Jordan murder, change, you can sign our petition and help in any way that you can to say, yes, re-support this guy. And look into the facts yourself. Like, you don't have to take my word for it. Look into it, and people can see why their voice could be valuable. And then if people down the road want to look into what I'm saying in terms of, you know, does Jordan have deals with certain companies that make it impossible to get the truth out there, that's another situation that I probably am not even that interested in.
Definitely. So I think I've read basically that Green's arguing what happened was basically that his, and to be clear, he's not like arguing that he had like absolutely nothing to do with it. He's basically saying that he only helped his friend get rid of the body. This was like his best friend since third grade, but he's definitely claiming that he didn't actually commit the murder.
So Sarah, that's such an important point, and he is innocent of murder.
Right.
He is not, what he's guilty of and has always said, he has not changed one iota of this from the beginning, is that hours later, Larry, I forget if he called him or showed up at his house,
mm-hmm.
said, I need your help to get rid of this body. And then they actually rode around with the body, and it did fucking terrible, terrible things. But again, we have to go back to the fact, Daniel would have gone to prison for that crime for 3 to 7 years max.
It's kind of less time than one would think, to be honest. But yeah.
Well, he didn't. He. Well, either way.
Yeah,
that's,
for sure.
That's something that like people can debate. But
no, I'm just like, I would have thought you would go to jail for longer for like disposing of a body and like obstructing justice and whatnot. But
well, once justice came calling, he told them everything. Well,
Okay, sorry. No, I'm just going on a side tangent.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it's a conversation. Either way, for disposing a body afterwards, you're not going to spend the rest of your life in prison.
Right. No.
Not to mention, you also said to the government who the guy is that did it.
Right.
So, he didn't say that, but he always was truthful is the point. And what gets tricky is, like, the last 2 minutes of our conversation is where certain people like 48 Hours, crime places, will not touch this case,
mm-hmm.
because for them, there can't be a level of nuance. They want someone who's innocent of everything.
Right.
They will not accept someone who is guilty of some part of it. And that is fucking tragic and old way of thinking that I think is slowly going
to
change.
Right. That's what I thought to myself reading this. I'm like, okay, this guy is not like completely innocent of all wrongdoing. It's not like, I don't know, like I watched Making a Murderer. I'm like, it's not like they're trying to make like some sort of Steve Naby argument. Like he had nothing to do with it. He acknowledges like, yeah, I did bad things. I helped, you know, dump this body, but I didn't actually commit the murder. So I feel like for some people, I feel like it's a
There's a really inhumane instinct, which I definitely was guilty of in the past, where if someone is arrested and in prison, and then you find out they didn't do what they're there for, but they aren't perfect people.
Right.
It's like, well, okay. And it almost makes everyone feel better.
I know. I'm like laughing, but it's not funny, but I'm like, yeah, no, that's 100% accurate to say.
Yeah. And once you have the cuffs on, it's human instinct to think that a person with cuffs on is guilty.
Right.
And that's just, again, so we have to sort of pivot, and it's a really hard thing to do. Not, I don't know, for me anyway. You have to pivot from sort of your human instincts, which you rely on at every moment, to facts, which can be far less interesting and you know, less emotions involved. So
for sure. I also think it's interesting, I guess, that his friend pretty much turned on him and like definitely got a much lighter sentence than he might have.
Yeah, I mean, his friend was manipulated, and he didn't have a lawyer present when he was, neither had a lawyer present when they were being interrogated. From what I recall, they weren't offered one either. They didn't know they could have one either. That I have to, I would have to double check.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, they didn't have lawyers present. And I don't know what I would, what would you say if you're in an interrogation room and someone says, your best friend is saying you did it and we're going to give you the death penalty. Human instinct is likely to lie.
Oh, yeah, I would flip like
you would probably,
a burger. Like,
you'd probably flip.
Yeah.
So it's. I think it's also important not to single story anyone, not to, you know, it's. There's also a lot of evidence out there that suggests that Larry felt like he had to kill James Jordan for a reason, which people can read about. I again, don't find it pertinent to why Daniel Green should be out.
Yeah, I also have read that there was like a couple weird connections to the sheriff's, to the sheriff's office that just like did not get explored. Basically, what I read was that 7 hours after the murder, there was a 1.5 minute phone call from the phone inside James Jordan's car to a man named Hubert Larry Deese, who was like a significant drug trafficker. And he also happened to be the biological son of the sheriff who oversaw the murder investigation. And I also read that he was a friend of one of the lead detectives on the case, which, like, also seems extremely suspect to me.
So Sheriff Hubert Stone, the guy in charge, who has a pattern, and that's one thing that we always want to look out for, right, is, like, is a pattern, is patterns, has a long, like, 15, his entire career of corruption. And,
great guy. Wow.
And, yeah. And his, he didn't acknowledge that Hubert Deese, he didn't acknowledge that that was his son because he had it, not with, he had Hubert,
right,
not with his wife.
Yeah.
Which is
I've always
made
read
the point
that,
of saying
yeah, biological son. Yeah.
And so he wouldn't even acknowledge that that was his son. But it certainly was his son. And yes, that's the first call they made was that was made from James Jordan's car was to one of the major drug dealers in North Carolina, who was the sheriff's son.
Suspect. And this guy that they called was never formally questioned by the police, I read.
Never formally questioned. And I mean, this thing just can keep now. Never that. Nor at the time anyway, had he been investigated for dealing the drugs that he was dealing with Larry. So him and Larry, the reason that one of the first calls,
mm-hmm.
and I want to stick to facts. This is the point. Larry Demery and the sheriff's son, Hubert, were dealing a lot of drugs out of a quote unquote luxury trailer business.
Interesting.
And that was never brought up.
That's, yeah, I mean, that, I don't know, how does that not sound like it's related? Like,
well, a lot of great journalists were probably having to deal with the public's interest in wanting to know if there was any Jordan gambling ties. And so we missed what was right in front of our nose.
So I wanted to just close, I guess, on the murder. Like, what do you think happened with this murder? And then we can close, what do you think happened with this whole retirement conspiracy?
What happened with the murder of James Jordan? I don't know if anyone will know exactly what happened, mm-hmm. because one guy is dead, James Jordan, and the other guy that killed him was Larry Demery, who has a pattern of not telling the truth.
Right. So, and who has a lot to lose by telling the truth if, in fact, he is not telling the truth. Hope that made sense to anyone except me.
I think it did.
Thanks.
And that part, I think, is what trips up a lot of reports on what happened, because we, as audience members, want a landing and want to know, all right, so how did what really happened? We need closure. And there isn't closure to this. To answer your question, though, Daniel Green wasn't there. Another reason we'll never know, because he wasn't even there. So he doesn't know. He just knows that he wasn't there. And that's how our criminal justice system works. If one person points at you, usually it takes two, but in this case, one. If one person points at you and says, you did it, you're gone. I mean, it happened to Ryan Ferguson, a friend of mine, where two people said it. It happens all of the time. And so that's kind of part one. There's a larger component, which is the corruption that was going on in this county mm-hmm. and really in the state. And God knows how many other Daniel Greens there are in prison and jails in North Carolina and really around the country. But
yeah.
And that's a whole nother topic, which we do go into on the podcast, is just the sheer level of blatant corruption by Johnson Britt, the district attorney. Unless his name is Britt Johnson, I always get...
I think it's... You know what? I'm not the fact checker.
Johnson Britt or Britt
Johnson? I
think
Johnson. It's Johnson Britt, yeah. Because I always read him referred to as Britt in articles, so...
Got it. So that is kind of a whole nother story.
Yeah, I think I also basically read that Green's defense is trying to argue that, like, James Jordan was essentially killed in, like, a drug deal gone wrong / mistake. I think they think that Larry Demery was involved in a drug deal at the time of the murder, thought that James Jordan was involved, and then I guess there was some sort of, like, scuffle disagreement, and he was unfortunately killed. I guess I'll close with my remarks, too. Like, I personally am inclined to also believe that Green did not commit the murder. Yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, if anyone thoroughly looks at the facts available, I'll put it this way. Daniel Green is just as guilty of murder as any one of us.
That's dark, but I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, maybe, I wasn't trying
to, as I finished that sentence. I'm not committed a felony, so like, I don't know about that, but I mean, yeah, none of us.
Well, I didn't say, I said guilty of murder.
Oh, right, but he did dump a body, so I've personally never done that. However, none of us are perfect.
They're two separate charges, though.
Right.
So it's not something that I need to harp on. The point is, if you look at all of the.
I get the point you're trying to make.
Yeah.
It's like none of us are perfect just because he did one thing that is a crime does not mean that he committed this extremely serious crime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. I like that. And I mean, I know in your podcast episode, I'm forgetting the title, on the retirement theory.
So there's two episodes. Yeah, exactly. It's good to clear it up. You're right. So the first episode where I look into conspiracy theory of the gambling is called No Thank You, Sam. And then while doing that is when I realized something was fishy about the actual trial and the murder. And so what we did was, which is fucking awesome about podcasts, is we were like, all right, well, let's do another episode.
And that's awesome.
And so we did a what's called, I think, special episode, The Trial of Daniel Green, and that's the second episode that you can listen to that gets into this component of it. And is different than most of our other episodes because we really just stick to the facts and what is known and what is not known, and it's not really about storytelling as much as outlining a man innocent of murder.
Yes, and everybody should definitely go listen to those episodes. As Andrew mentioned, check out the change.org petitions. Yeah. Definitely recommend doing your own research, but consider signing.
Yeah.
Do you have any other like closing remarks? I feel like we sort of abandoned this retirement conspiracy theory, but honestly, it's because like, even though I like conspiracy theories, I'm like, and that's the problem with conspiracy theories. It's like the more actual research you do, the less that you really can believe it. But I also feel like conspiracies are like by nature very emotion based, because if you just decided that you wanted to suspend your disbelief, like you're going to do it in the face of like as many facts as you encounter.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You're right. It shows the power of the mind and that yeah. you can convince yourself on a lot of things. I hadn't thought about this before, but what maybe is interesting about conspiracy theories is that if you go into them and you keep your eyes open, you'll probably find some sort of injustice that did happen along the way that's worth talking about.
Yeah, that is super interesting. And that definitely happened to me here and you too. It's actually funny because I feel like I didn't realize that you had this path, but I feel like we had parallel paths, like trying to just look into this conspiracy theory. It led to like an actual serious injustice.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Exactly. Well, I want to thank you so much for doing this interview.
Yeah.
Check out the What Really Happened podcast again. And yeah, that's it. I don't know. Thank you again.
Thank you. Awesome. Wow. I think that was our first interview with no questions about The Rock.
Betches.